Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. This is an exciting episode. I'm here with Bart DeSmet. He's with the Reactive Extensions team. That's really the black magic inside Microsoft. Bart, I'm excited to hear. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about Reactive Extensions. I think it's one of the things that developers underutilize and don't realize they've got it at their disposal. But before we do, tell us who you are.
All right, so I'm Bart. I'm originally from Belgium, hence the funny sounding and looking name. I've been with Microsoft since 2007. Have always been an MVP for C# before that. And you know, when I joined, I had this big crush on everything link-related, language integrated query.
Yeah.
Decided to move after a couple of years to Eric's team, where I'm now. Working on, you know, all sorts of link-related stuff, including reactive extensions, which basically is linked to events.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a good intro here and kind of segue into reactive extensions. Reactive extensions have been around for a long time. When was the first reactive extensions? Do you know?
You know, I joined the team like 3 years ago, and then we were sort of like finishing up the shipping with Windows Phone 7 initially.
Yeah,
there had been work on RX for a while then, so I would say it's around 5 years old now. Since you know the ID sort of was built up and sort of put to test using you know the first betas and whatnot. So yeah,
and we'll talk about it in a minute. But reactive extensions is really becoming it's really blooming, right? I mean, it's being used in a lot of our internal products on our server products. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just really. I mean, it's not just an experiment anymore.
Oh no, definitely not. You know, we see a lot of products taking it up, shipping it with them. Notably, you know, there's Windows Phone where we live in the realm of the device, so yep. You know, you can't get it off. We have it in System Center. SQL Server components are using it, and we're putting a big bet on it for next versions of you know server products as well as. For example, infrastructure and Bing. So it's not in the smallest corners of the world, to put it that way.
That's right. And I mean, it just goes to show it's how robust and reliable it is as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So now that we've talked about it, what is it? What? Tell me exactly. I'm a developer. I'm a C# developer. Let's start there. How is Reactive Extensions going to change my life? What's the problem you're solving in the first place?
Yeah, so... The problem is essentially coming from making the observation, and this will sound like a funny word in just a moment when I talk about observable sequences, but we made the observation that you know, dealing with event-based programming is really hard. Just to give you the sample of like you know an application today being surrounded with sensors, surrounded with push notifications from the cloud, you know, surrounded with like social media streams coming into the app, and maybe you want to write, you know, queries on top of that. That say like, you know, I have an event stream, but really I want to aggregate it over windows of time, or maybe I want to merge it with another sequence, or when a certain sequence, a certain event fires, I want to listen to something else. So there's a lot of coordination that you have to do. Not even talking about error handling yet. So there's a lot of things going on in this world.
Okay, so let me hit pause here, Bart, and let's talk about an event stream. That may be a term that's not familiar to some developers. So an example of an event stream would be like perhaps from a GPS. A GPS sensor is constantly sending what my location is, and that it's doing that as a position changed event, and so I'm getting the stream of events as my position is changed. That's what you mean by event stream.
Yep, exactly. Just
and then
like,
how do you handle that? Developers handle that all the time today already, Bart. What are they doing wrong?
So using the classic way of doing event handling today, there are a couple of you know restrictions. First of all, you end up in having a very imperative way of stating the solution to your problem. And this is where, you know, Link will come in just a second here in the storyline. But, you know, as soon as you use, like, .NET events, for example, you double-click on, you know, the sensor, you know, data changed event or data received event, and spoof your back in, you know, C-sharp or VB code, and you're writing imperative style code. And then you have a problem, you know, I want to do something time-based. So what will you do inside the event handler? Well, you may start a timer if it hasn't been started yet. So you have a field you check for null. And you start doing a lot of, you know, those orchestration things yourself. And before you know, because now you have a timer to do time-based computations, you have a second event handler somewhere else in your code.
Now, wait just a second, Bart. Let me make sure I'm following you. So a time-based way of handling events would be back to our example of GPS. So we have this event stream coming in, and it comes in every 10 milliseconds. And I mean, I could really repaint the screen every 10 seconds, but because of performance, I really only want to repaint the screen every 2 seconds. So I need to ignore a whole bunch in between. I could write a whole bunch of logic. That's really what you're talking about, time-based, right?
Exactly, exactly. So in this particular case, it would be sampling, right? And you know, the thing that people would have to do is when they want to start listening to the GPS in this particular case, you know, they would have two handlers essentially, right? They would have a handler for a timer, they would have a handler for the data received event, and then whenever the timer fires, you would have to fish out the latest value sent by the event handler, right?
Yep.
Or received by the event handler. So you need to have a field sitting somewhere that, you know, you write to from one piece of code, and then you come from another piece of code. And
so I keep the latest position that was given to me, and I wait for my event to fire on my timer, and then I coordinate those two.
Exactly.
It's a pain in the neck.
Yep. And we haven't even touched upon the subject here of, like, what if something goes wrong? Well, if any of those parties, you know, has an exception, or if you want to cancel the whole computation, right? Like, canceling is the more obvious one. You started with, you know, two events, right? Now you have two event handlers that you need to get rid of, or you need to be able to stop the timer as well as unhook the GPS sensor.
Yep.
Now, if you forget any of the two, bad things will happen, right? Like, if you forget to unhook the GPS sensor, well, maybe, you know, you have some, you know, some reference to the object that writes to the field, right? You know, the object containing the field. So you may have a memory leak there. If you forget to cancel, or if you cancel, you know, the GPS receive event, but you forget to cancel the timer.
The timer, then you've got all... So now I've got all this extra code to handle all these scenarios. What if they unplug the GPS? What if the timer is delayed? What, all these different pieces. I've got a lot of code to handle what should have... It sounds like, in when we discuss it, it's a simple scenario. Turns out to be 1,000 lines. Now, and what if I want to do something based on change? I don't want to refresh my screen if I haven't moved more than a mile, let's say, right? That's
exactly
yet another complexity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And so the other observation here is, while we were doing this exercise of, you know, doing things using classic.NET events, somewhere along the way, you know, you start to lose the fact it was an event to begin with, right? You have, like, you know, your GPS events, which, you know, are something everyone knows, and now you say, I want to have GPS events that only fire once a second. Well, in doing so, you're in the imperative land of, you know, writing code with semicolons, curly braces, while loops, whatever, right?
Sure,
but
yeah.
The event is nowhere near anymore. You're just sitting there in code. And now you don't have, you know, something you could even think of handing out to a different component in the system where you say the visualization library can just subscribe to the GPS events that come in every second. Like, there's no such event anymore, so you would have to start writing your own containers, your own helper types that actually expose new events based on the existing ones.
And now you have all these layers and all these references to objects and all these events that you better unsubscribe properly as well, but they're all nested deep inside your code.
Yep, and moreover, you can't reuse all of that stuff, and that's maybe the bigger hassle. You may say, well, now I can do this one time and be very careful about a lot of things and synchronization and whatnot. Like, you know, say you're willing to take, you know, all that pain upon yourself. But then you say, well, I've now done this sampling of GPS things. And the class you've just written is full of event handlers with specific types and specific types for fields. And you can't even dream to make things more generic because the event handlers not often are generic, whatever. And you've just written this way of doing sampling using a certain timer in the framework. And now you say, but wait, if I want to sample some other event stream, like stock streams coming in.
Build it all from scratch again.
Yeah, just copy-paste, you know, and do exactly the same kind of thing. And now the big realization is, well, we've already solved this kind of problem in the classic enumerable world, right, with linked to objects. We said, if you can represent a stream of values, in this case a stream that you forage over, like a stream you retrieve explicitly, as opposed
like
to
a list of users or anything.
Exactly. As opposed to a stream that's being pushed into the application, like an event stream, but both of them are streams, right? But like in linked to objects, it's essentially a matter of chaining operations together, right? You say, I have a source, which is an IEnumerable. I do dot where on it or something, and I get back a new IEnumerable. It's all generic, and you just supply some functions to that thing, like in this case a predicate function, and off you go. Like, you just compose those things together. And so, can't we do exactly the same for event streams? Because, well, they have sequence nature.
Yes.
You know,
so if I were to draw the parallel, Bart, right now, or back before link, if I was going to try and filter a list, I'd have to loop through that list, have an if statement, put it into another list that way, and finally get my results. Now I can just do it with a simple where, and I get back that enumerable like you said. I can do it in just a simple, reusable, generic way. Event streams, reactive extensions are trying to do the same thing, or not trying to do, are doing the same thing for event streams that are coming in.
Yep, totally right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the thing is, like, as you do that for event streams, well, a lot of things from linked to objects apply. In fact, you know, 95%, I would say, of all the linked to objects operators simply exist in Rx as well. There are obvious ones that don't exist, like, for example, order by. You know, you can't order all the stock streams, you know, like, you know, that's an infinite stream and it would just be out of memory exception, essentially.
It would always be out of order, basically.
Yep. Exactly, yeah. And like as you try to order the things, you lose the fact it was a stream that was based on time, right? You know, there was this timely nature to it. And because there's a timely nature to the way the messages are received, and we can sort of talk separately about the core differences between enumerable and observable sequences there, like event streams versus enumerable streams. But because there is a time nature to it, no, events are coming in at a certain time, with a certain rate, whatever. We have a whole bunch of operators on top of the link to objects set of operators that do time-based operations. Like, to go back to the sample of the GPS sensor or, you know, any sensor that you want to sort of sample, the way you do this sampling would be by just doing, you know, GPS.sample, pass in a time span value, and there you go. As you subscribe to it, we'll fire up the timer, set up the fields, whatever is needed, and make sure you can also like stop that whole computation. But the thing is, from the user point of view, it's just as simple as doing dot sample and passing in time spent from seconds one.
Now, let me stop you for a second. So there's a gist of it here that sounds complicated, right? I mean, but really, if once you get your head around it, this is a simple implementation of just something that every developer really deals with. So let's talk about Windows 8 just for a second. Mm-hmm. I'm a Windows 8 developer. First, let's just talk about availability. I'm a Windows 8 developer. I write in C#. Reactive Extensions is available to me as a .NET developer, right?
Yep, totally, yes.
And Visual Basic.
And Visual Basic, yep. Mm-hmm.
And what if I'm doing this as an HTML app? Do I have Reactive Extensions?
Oh, yes, you do have Reactive Extensions for JavaScript there, so you can use that. Or you can do a little bit of interop, you know, say that you have a WinMD file you're building using C# or VB. You can use Rx Insight and expose the things to the JavaScript app as well.
If I'm writing a WinMD class or a library type, I can include Reactive Extensions there, share it across all the different technologies. And what about portable class libraries?
Oh, yes. So starting with RxV2, we support portable library as well. So means today you can actually write your Rx-based applications or your Rx-based core logic for the desktop as well as Windows 8. And we'll actually add Windows Phone 8 to that pretty soon as well. So you will just have one library for those three big platforms today. Yep.
Very nice. Very nice. So JavaScript, Windows Phone, dot, pretty much everything is the goal,
yep,
right?
Exactly.
You, yep. Reactive extensions. Now, sometimes when you see delivery to JavaScript and to .NET, the parity between them is not even. What is the parity for reactive extensions between JavaScript and .NET?
Oh, it's actually at a very, very high level, meaning every single operator we have in rx.NET exists in the JavaScript one.
Every single operator is a high level, huh? I'd hate to see the very high level. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure some of the naming conventions may be changed because of a wait versus promises.
Yeah, we tend to use some control flow primitives as method names, like, you know, throw and return and things. So, you know, JavaScript makes a big deal of not using those in method names or function names. So we had to do some renames there and to do some workarounds for the lack of overload resolution or overloading of functions.
Whenever something is laid on top of some development and they're solving a problem of like redundant code, often that is a negative impact on performance. Have you guys done research and testing around performance on reactive extensions?
So performance-related work, because we're going to all this, you know, server stuff today and all the services, we've done a tremendous investment in RxV2. Especially the .NET version right now, but also, you know, starting to do a lot of that stuff in the JavaScript space with regards to performance. And so it has to do with a number of things, like, you know, what does it take for a single event to flow to all those query operators? How much method calls does it take?
Right.
How many allocations are there? And we've cut all of those things down tremendously to the extent in the .NET version we can do tens to hundreds of millions of messages a second. So
using reactive extensions isn't necessarily going to. It's not going to kill performance of my app. If anything, it might actually improve it because it'll make sure that I unsubscribe correctly and that I handle events properly.
Yeah, exactly. And especially as you start, you know, adding more of that stuff to your application. Just think of the example of having a bunch of streams coming in, or one stream coming in with, you know, companies and stock quotes or something. And now say that for every company that comes in, you actually start to listen to a news feed, which is another event stream, right? And you start to merge all of those things together.
Right.
Now, you quickly see that going out of hand because it's like nested subscriptions, right?
Yeah.
For every company that came in, you know, to one stream, you start a new stream. And, you know, as applications become more reactive, more feed-driven, more cloud notification-driven, I can envision a lot of places where people just, you know, forget to unsubscribe something and things get out of hand.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And then they just have these leaks that are invisible until they become a problem. And then you got to chase them down and it's complex. So not only does adding reactive extensions inside your application, not only does it make sure you're doing everything right, it actually helps around maintainability because you're reducing the code tremendously. Just like Link reduced the number of lines of code down to just a trivial number, and then it allowed for the compiler to make it faster. But reactive extensions does the same thing, right? It takes them the thousands of lines to deal with all these crazy scenarios and reduces them down to just a handful of lines that are written in basically Link that are talking to reactive extensions, right?
Yeah, just chaining some operators together as method calls, essentially. The beauty of that is also, you know, there's no state that you have to keep around yourself. And you can basically just select your 5 or 6 lines link query that does a pretty complex, you know, query over event streams, right? Click and say extract method or something, right? And then make it slightly more generic, maybe, and put it in a portable library and reuse that thing you've just composed a number of times for different scenarios. So
you could basically take the reactive extensions work that you're doing and let that be generic because it handles it so well.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so the right way to use reactive extensions is when I'm dealing with events. But there's a wrong way to use reactive extensions too. What are some of the anti-patterns around using don't use reactive extensions for?
Mm-hmm.
What comes next?
Yeah, so It's basically like a tipping point you have to see when you're starting to write some code. So say you're doing a button click handler, right? What happens in a button click handler is you do a bunch of imperative code, maybe to set up a connection to a service, and maybe in there at some point you start listening to another event stream. That's all fine, but there's a lot of, you know, imperative code that you're putting behind a button handler.
Yeah.
And, you know, in those typical cases, you know, regular .NET events are just great, are just fine. They're slightly more efficient in terms of not having to allocate disposable resources and things. And it's basically just like a one-shot kind of event that doesn't even carry data with it, right? It's more like a signal.
Yeah.
It's not like the button click handler has an event that says like, oh my god, there's a lot of useful information
so
here.
So click events, perhaps selection events, loaded events, things like that. Just do them the way you're doing them today. We're really talking about significant scenarios where reactive extensions will come in. Things, not just streams. You can also deal with just normal events if...
Oh, yes. And
especially if you include thresholds and times and things like that.
And so the thing is, like, it's basically you have to sort of get this alarm bell in your head at some point. You know, like, people are, you know, writing some code, and you sort of need to start recognize some patterns, right? You're sitting in the text change click handler, for example, and maybe the only thing you're doing is updating something in the UI using a few model or whatever. And then you say, that's just great, that's just fine. But then you're in the text changed handler and you say, I need to feed this to a web service that will give me an event stream of results for the input of the user back, right?
Right. And a text changed event fires for every single letter that the user's typing in.
Exactly. And so maybe
if they can type 120 words a minute, that could be pretty fast.
Exactly. And so maybe you want to start, you know, sampling that or throttling that, or maybe you want to even, you know, starting with the text changed event, typically you have to know where the text is, like it's in the control, it's sitting somewhere else, and you start to feel like, I have a text changed event, but I really want to have an event stream of strings thrown at me for every single entry in the UI. I want to have an event call that just contains the data. And you start to see those patterns emerge in your code. I'm really just taking an event that contains event args, and I'm turning it into an event that has strings. Oh, that looks like a projection, looks like a select to me. And like as soon as you have a threshold of like two or three of those things you start to compose in your regular C# code inside your event handler, that may be the tipping point where you say, you know, just screw it. Let's take this .NET event and convert it into an observable sequence. And then I can do RX on top of it. So typically,
okay, so wait a minute. Now, if I'm developing a Windows 8 app and I want to implement, say, like the search contract, that's a text box. Mm-hmm. And every time the user is typing there, I get another event raised that I have to deal with that I go and I want to give them, you know, like helpers or suggestions along the way. Every time they type, it's another hit to my server. If my application is successful or widely used, I'm beating the crap out of my server. So maybe that is this a good scenario for reactive extensions using, you know, being able to handle that?
Yeah, this is actually a perfect scenario. In that, you know, you have event streams coming from the UI, you have event streams coming from a web server when the asynchronous callbacks complete. So, you know, it starts to feel a lot like you really want to have the power of RX to do, you know, all of those little things you have to do to make the scenario work. Like you want to say the user types really fast, or the user just starts to type, and you know, every word that you start to type starts with a single letter, right? And so as you type, you know, the first letter, you don't want to suck down the whole dictionary or the whole Wikipedia.
Everything that starts with a T.
Exactly. And so,
and plus, how useful is that really? It's not useful.
Exactly. Yes. And so you want to throttle that down, or maybe you want to say, like, you know, if the input is short, I just want to apply some threshold to the number of results that is fetched back. Like I want to do a take 500 or take 10 or whatever fits in the box there in case there's like little results. So you basically want to apply those things on top of your basically an event stream of text changed events that come from the search contract or the search box in Windows 8. And, you know, You could start doing that with classic event handlers, but pretty soon you start to hit your head against the wall.
No,
to say,
that's
like,
right. You get a million. You're back to a million lines of code. You're back to making it harder to maintain. You're back, back to make, you. Actually, I think you're just back to a better opportunity to make a mistake. Because you have all these things around. So here's what I want in my search box. I don't want to react unless there's a certain number of key presses, right? I only want, if there's only one character, I don't want to do anything. I only want to do three. And I don't want to do it constantly. I want to wait until there's, you know, half a second that passes as well, right? Because I want to make sure that they've had their chance to type in whatever it is. Then I go hit against my server. That, just that little bit of logic is going to really rescue my server as far as performance, right? And Reactive Extensions comes to the rescue, and instead of having a million things to be able to handle, how many are there, when was the last time they clicked it, how many milliseconds have passed, and, you know, and handling all the events being raised, Reactive Extensions comes in and says, "How, you're the master at this, Bart. How many lines of code could I do that in?"
Oh, you can do that in one line, essentially. You just do .where.sample, right? You know, where the number of characters is less than 3, or larger than 3, better. .sample, or, well, .toddle, actually, in this case, because you don't want to, like, have events every second. You basically want to say, I want to toddle down the sequence based on when the user types. So the user is typing. We don't want to have a new event come in within 1 second. And, you know, after that 1 second elapsed of silence, the user isn't typing anymore, the event propagates. So right. That's really like textbox.where.sample, not sample.toddle, excuse me. So it's really just like, you know, two operators chained together in a fluent way, as opposed to having a lot of things floating around everywhere in your class file.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you might hit carriage return and put them on multiple lines so you can read it real easily, but there's only one semicolon, I guess, is a way to think
exactly.
about it.
It's one expression, essentially. It's a query expression.
Now, okay, so let's go this far. If I'm a Windows 8 developer implementing a search contract and I'm not using Reactive Extensions, I had better be reading from an in-memory array or something stupid like that. I mean, if you're going to build a search contract in Windows 8, you had better use Reactive Extensions.
Yeah, definitely.
It just makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, especially you're dealing with like input you don't really trust, in the sense that you know, there's a lot of timely characteristics to the input because there's a user on the other end, right? As opposed to having a list, for example, you know, it's a finite thing, you know. Now, a lot of things about, you know, data that's just in memory is so different from data that's coming in an event-driven way.
That's right.
And so, yeah, doing those time-based operations is something that traditionally has been notoriously hard, using all sorts of timer constructs. And
so if a developer who's watching right now is building an application that uses sensor data, you know, I mean, we unify it in a single API, but that doesn't mean that we've handled all of this event stream management for them, right? They still have to be able to determine for themselves how frequently they'll sample it and how they're going to handle it. Reactive Extensions is the way to do it. And if there's a developer watching who's building an application that has a search contract interacting with the user and really anything that has something the equivalent of a text box text changed event, right? And they're going to use that text change handle to go and query some costly service or some sort of costly operation, Reactive Extensions, again, is another way for them to be able to mitigate the pain on their server and make their application, honestly, that much better and be able to reduce the lines, reduce the increase the maintenance or increase the value, the ease of maintenance, I guess, and reduce the number of errors, make sure they do their subscriptions and unsubscriptions correctly, and honestly make their code a little bit more readable. In .NET, I have awaits and I have async. You know, it's part of .NET 4.5 now. That's a great way to do asynchronous operations. Do any of those take care of what Reactive Extensions, like, are those in conflict with each other?
Definitely not, actually. I want to sort of like sketch a little picture for that, that you sort of should imagine while you're watching the show here. If you look at the world of just enumerable sequences, right, you have things that you do using a for each loop because there are multiple values, right? And you have things you just do by calling a method or, you know, accessing a property, because they return a single value. So you have single value versus multiple values in the, you know, innumerable synchronous world, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It's exactly the same on the asynchronous side. And what we've done actually with Rx is provide the multi-value abstraction, the equivalent to for each, the equivalent to innumerable sequences, which is known as observable sequences. So that's a multi-value stream because, well, events typically fire 0 times, 1 time, 100 times, maybe an infinite number of times, right? Like a lot of events don't have an ending point.
Right.
And then you have the single value asynchronous case as well. And so in the single value asynchronous case, traditionally there's been a lot of ways of doing that. You know, in .NET 1.0, we had the begin and invoke pair of methods called the APM. Later we had the event-based asynchronous pattern like used web clients.
Like load completed, things like that.
Exactly. And so the key thing to notice there is that both of those approaches have a very invasive effect on your code in a sense that you have to kick off the operation and then you have to write a callback.
Yeah.
That will actually deal with the completion of the asynchronous operation. And you lose all the benefits of sequencing and putting a try-catcher on that because, like, you know, you have to have a try-catcher on the start part and around the asynchronous completion part.
You can also lose the thread context and so much mess. And you have all these handlers and you got to make sure they're in the right order. Yeah, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And so that's exactly what the async await feature solves by doing two things. First of all, we change the pattern from, you know, APM and event-based asynchrony to task-based asynchrony, meaning what you get back out of a method that's asynchronous is a task of T. And so a task of T is really like a special case of an iObservable of T in some sense, that it's an event that can fire once to tell you, here's the result of the computation. And so that's where the analogy is with, you know, the synchronous world, right? In the synchronous world, you would just get a T back, like, you know, like a string from a download call.
Right.
You get a task of string back. Or maybe you only have, like, synchronous stock quote retrievals, which would be an IEnumerable of stock quotes. Well, if you have an asynchronous world, an asynchronous parallel, you have an observable of stock quotes. So it's really this one value versus multiple values, synchronous versus asynchronous kind of matrix that you have to have. And so Rx totally fits in the multi-value asynchronous case. And so with the await keyword in C# and VB, we make the consumption of single value asynchronous methods easier. Like you get all the regular control flow back, you can just do await, web download async or whatever, and then just put, you know, your try catches around it using blocks, what have you, right? Like all of that stuff. And the compiler takes care of, like, all the coordination behind the scenes of the callbacks. Rx does something very similar using a library, but for multi-value streams. So where you have, like, the for each keyword in classic, you know, enumerable sequences, we have .subscribe to actually pass in the callback that will actually execute whenever an event is received.
For every single event, right? That's what you're actually going through. Yeah.
And so all of the logic you express not using language constructs, but using fluent method syntax, right? Like .where, .select, .throttle, .whatever. That's really where all of your logic goes. And in fact, you can use link query expressions using Rx as well. You can just write from X in something where select, you know, using the keywords that you have in C#, right? And so both worlds, you know, are there and complement each other very well because, well, you have those single value asynchronous cases, like, you know, just doing a download or, you know, doing a task of T to compute pi behind the scenes or whatever. Like, all of those are single value computations.
That's right. You can await one thing so easily with await, awaiting an unknown number of things. Await's not even an option, right? You need another scenario. That's where reactive extensions comes in.
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, we have await support in observables as well, on observable sequences. And the reason we do that is the scenario, for example, of aggregations, right? an aggregation is an event that fires once, right? Like you start with like a stock stream and you say, I want to have, you know, 8 hours worth of stock coming out of stock exchange. And I want to compute the average low and average high for the day or something on top.
Across the like year-to-date number almost, right? Or moment-to-date. Or as it's coming in, I want to get some aggregate value. Talk about complex doing that right now. You put it in a member variable and try and holy moly.
Oh, yes. And so in Rx, you would basically do something like, you know, you have the stock stream. You would do a group by to actually segregate it based on the company name. Then you would do something like a dot buffer or a dot window on top of those guys to actually compute averages. Like, it's all very fluent. But then at the end of the day, maybe you end up with an event that just will fire once with the average value for a certain company at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, updated. The average is updated. One event, how easy is it to write the code for that? I mean, that's beautiful. Talk about reducing complexity down to a tiny little dot.
Exactly. And so because...
And you're doing it knowing that all your subscriptions are right, and you're doing it knowing all your unsubscribe and on are right. Yeah, that's beautiful.
All those timers that you have there because you are doing windowing or buffering based on time, you know, all of those have to be maintained as well, and Rx takes care of all of that. Now...
Okay. Now, wait a minute, Bart. Mm-hmm. I'm picturing a developer watching the show, and he's like, okay, I'm starting to figure this out. This is, you know, I can really add a lot of value to my application. I want to do my search contracts with reactive extensions first, or I'm dealing with sensor data right now, and I can feel the pain, right? Reactive extensions is going to be the right way to do it. What do you tell them? I mean, where do they start? Where do they begin? I mean, reactive extensions, it's not part of the framework. It's on a separate cadence, right? So they have to download it. They use NuGet to go get it, add it to their application.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So and then where do they begin to become masters of it? You know, where's the Jedi Knight School for reactive extensions?
So there's a number of places, actually. There is a website called intro2rx.com, I believe it is. Or you can just search using favorite search engine for intro to reactive extensions.
Yep.
It's somebody from the UK who's Lee Campbell, who's one of our, you know, superstar MVPs, who's done a lot of work to write up, you know, an online ebook on Reactive. We have forums on MSDN where we have, you know, another set of superheroes, you know, James, Dave, you know, a lot of people there that actually answer a lot of community questions.
Sure.
And then, you know, there are some very good videos out there on Channel 9, for example, from TechEd presentations where we show Rx really in practice. Like, you know, the search contact example is there in one shape or form. Kinect programming using Rx is in that session as well. And we basically, you know, do gesture detection just using, you know, an observable skeleton events, essentially.
Gestures, yet another good way to use
exactly. And
yeah,
so that
beautiful.
One has a lot of samples going with it. And so if you want to have some hands-on, you know, examples, like I would recommend, you know, looking on Channel 9 for the reactive extensions, TechEd, and, you know.
Yeah, and there's tons of stuff, right? I mean, just tons of stuff. You are on a lot of those videos, no doubt about it, right? Going through, you got your whiteboard up, and you're going through all kinds of details of some aspect of reactive extensions.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. If I have reactive extensions, let's see. I want version 2. It's ready now. It's fully baked.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the current version you will get through NuGet will be, you know, RxV2, compatible with all the platforms we talked about before. There are some other ways of getting it as well, which may be interesting for the Windows 8 specific audience.
Okay.
So you can use NuGet just searching for the Rx packages. But you can also use the Visual Studio Gallery, the Visual Studio Extension Manager, just to include reactive extensions. And that will register reactive extensions with the add reference dialog in Visual Studio.
So now it's there. Now it's there for every project if you do it
exactly.
that way, right? Yeah, going through Visual Studio Gallery.
Yeah, and so in Windows 8, you know, the add reference mechanism has changed a little bit, so you can just reference a whole API. A whole SDK, as opposed to having to chase down what are the four or five assemblies I need. And RX contains quite some assemblies to make it portable. You know, like certain subsets are portable to certain platforms.
The JavaScript version is friendly with WinJS?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah. So it has bindings that can be downloaded from GitHub that integrate with WinJS promises and, you know, all the APIs that remotely feel or smell like observable sequences we basically provide wrappers for.
Can I use the JavaScript library or the, you know, RxJS, can I use that in a non-Windows 8, just a website?
Oh, yes, definitely. Like, it works everywhere, you know. Every browser that supports JavaScript, which means every browser, of course. You can integrate with you know, jQuery, you know, all the frameworks that are out there. We have some bridges for the most popular ones. And it also works, for example, in Node.js. So, like, if you want to do some web programming, you know, we just have rx.node.js as well as an extension on top of the core Rx library that basically knows about a lot of things in Node.js that it can integrate with and provide observability.
Beautiful. Won't web developers love that? That's excellent. All right. Bart, seriously, reactive extensions are fantastic. You know, I mean, we could talk for hours and hours. You have so much to give on reactive extensions. You can hear it the way you're talking. Thanks a lot for being on the show today. It's been, I mean, just a great kind of just a high level and a deep dive as well. You know, it's been a lot of fun. I know there's so many more resources out there, and we've talked about where they can get it. I want to speak directly to the viewer now. I mean, if you, the viewer, are building an application that deals with events, and you're starting to feel the code mount on you, don't forget there is a tool in your toolbox, reactive extensions that you can use. The ramp up time is short, but you have to invest so you can understand this new paradigm of dealing with your events, your event streams, your observables, so that you can handle them in so many fewer lines of code than you are today in a reliable, maintainable way that's highly performant. Don't miss out on the opportunity to use reactive extensions in your application, because they're sitting there, they're in version 2, they're excellent, they're way to go. All right, Bart, I could go on and on. Thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you later.